Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about women in sports to begin the show today. Today, 40% of athletes are women, yet they only receive about 4% of sports media coverage. And on the show, we're taking a look at women rising to the top of the sports profession and why it's important to have female leaders in the industry. With me is Mary Jo Kane. She's the founder and former director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sports. Mary Jo Kane has done research on the media coverage of women's sports. She's also an expert on the passage and implementing and the impact of Title IX. Her work's been cited in the New York Times, the Washington Post, certainly NPR. So we'll be looking at media coverage of women's sports and the history and impact of Title IX. So how do you think institutions in the media treat women's sports? Do you think they are treated differently? Did you play in women's sports? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Mary Jo Kane, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm thrilled and honored to be here.
You know, the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sports began in 1993, if I'm not mistaken, at the University of Minnesota. Talk about what made the school realize the need for more research on women in sports.
Well, I'll give you the Cliff's Notes version, but in 1992 was the 20th anniversary of Title IX. And after decades of being told that girls aren't interested in playing sports, and even if they did, they wouldn't be any good, Title IX just blew open the doors. And we built them a ballpark, and girls and women came in unprecedented numbers. But as a faculty member at the University of Minnesota and one of the few people in the country doing research on sport and gender, I was concerned that the research on the impact of that increase in unprecedented participation was not keeping pace. So I met with a development officer who said, tell me about your idea. And I said, we need to have a research center inside of a major research university like the University of Minnesota or a place like the University of Wisconsin that took seriously the scientific enterprise of what it meant for girls and women to play sports. This development officer found a 1945 graduate of our college. Her name was Dorothy Tucker. She read my proposal, and fortunately for me, she liked our proposal. She wanted to be a pioneer, and she asked the development officer at one point, now, if I give money to something like this, will I be a pioneer? And I said, somewhat sarcastically but accurately, please tell Dr. Tucker that if she gives $50 to a major research university to study the impact of sport and physical activity from a scientific perspective, she'll be a pioneer. And she gave $1 million to start the Tucker Center. And it remains the first and only one of its kind, not just in the country, but in the world.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. What are the types of research and projects that the center has tackled in over this 28-year period?
Well, certainly the work that I have done with myself and colleagues around the country on the amount and type of media coverage given to women's sports versus men's sports. There is also a body of research on how, and speaking of the wake of Title IX, as we approach the 50th anniversary, Larry, one unintended consequence of Title IX is the decline of women in key leadership roles. Your listening audience might not know, most people don't, that prior to Title IX, over 90% of all head coaches and administrators in women's sports were female nationwide. But today that number is only about 43%. So even though it's been wonderful to have men come into the profession, at the same time, we've lost a lot of key leadership positions. We've also done research around self-esteem, the impact or the lack of the ability to participate from underserved populations, young girls of color. So it's really kind of a soup to nuts. If you're interested in doing research on girls and women in sports, come to the Tucker Center and you will find a home.
It's really interesting. For me, it's been very interesting because as the father of daughters, and I have a young daughter who's a senior now and in high school and plays, she runs cross country in the fall and she plays soccer in the spring. So believe me, I've kept pretty close tabs on it. I also served on the University of Wisconsin athletic board. I had very firsthand experience at all of this. If you think about it, women are knocking down some barriers throughout the industry of sports. Think about Kim Ang, for example, who recently became the first female general manager of a Major League Baseball team, the Marlins. What impact do female leaders have on the industry?
Well, I just think that what research indicates is that the more diversity and the more voices you bring into any organization, not just in the sports world, the better off you'll be. It's a value added because you're getting different perspectives. Excuse me. That it's and oftentimes, and this is true with minorities, not just with women in general, is that they have experiences that those who tend to be in power, meaning white men, just don't have. And so they can, if nothing else, provide input to the organization before it makes its final decision. And it's not just about doing the right thing, which is to increase, obviously, your diversity, but also to provide different perspectives that in the end make your organization a much better and much more informed organization. Can I just take a point of privilege here, though, speaking of the University of Wisconsin Athletics, sure. If I may? I just saw that one of the most iconic leaders ever in the history of college sports, Barry Alvarez, has announced his retirement. So Godspeed to him and what a class act he was.
Yeah.
Or is, I should say, he still is. Yes, let me be clear about that.
I happened to be on the board when Pat Richter stepped down and Barry Alvarez stepped up into that role, and it's been fun for me to watch him a little bit from a distance, but he's certainly done wonders for the UW. I was thinking today before this show, I got thinking about the commercial women involved in the sort of the commercial business side of things, and Lauren Hobart came to mind. You know, she's CEO of Dick's Sporting Goods.
Right.
And you look at the changes she's made already in the sort of the upper echelons of the company in terms of many more women being involved already, and she hasn't been in that position very long. And I think she's done some great ads, television ads, that support women in sports. There's one that starts by showing all of the many women who are in leadership positions, and then women and young girls playing sports, and then she comes on in the end and says, "It's our job to get more women to the top of their game."
Yeah, absolutely.
Any thought on her?
Well, I just think it's wonderful, again, that this you have a CEO who's the head of a major corporation and certainly around selling sporting goods. Again, speaking of the impact of Title IX, Larry, we went from, so in my generation, I'm grew up in Central Illinois, and I was a classic pre-Title IX tomboy. And as much as I love sports, there just simply were not opportunities for me. And in two generations, when people ask me about the impact of Title IX, I say we have gone from young girls like me hoping that there is a team to young girls today like your daughter hoping that they make the team. And that's the difference because of Title IX. And the reason it's related to your question is because recent research has shown that over 85% of all women who are in C-suite level positions in this country across the board, corporate America, educational institutions, have a sports background. So just like young men have learned for generations the lessons on the playing fields and ballparks, so now do young women who then take those lessons and bring them into the corporate boardroom. And they then know that if they can encourage other young women to have the same kinds of sports experiences that they do, it's a plus for not just the young girl herself, but for their families, for their communities. Again, just up and down the food chain, it really matters to have girls and women participating.
Well, there's a way of looking at things, the competitive nature of it. I think that was always there for the boys is now there for the girls. And man, there are some great women athletes out there who are making great leadership positions, and it's wonderful. Vern couldn't stay on the line, but he wanted to share an observation. In the 50s, women were focused on fighting for equality in their education. Sports were less of a priority at the time. Not great that they had to choose, but when they did participate in sports, swimming was popular where Vern was anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Some truth
well,
to that.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things we know, again, from the kind of research that we do at the Tucker Center is that early on, it wasn't that we girls and women never played sports. I was a golfer. I still am a golfer. I'm not great, so please don't ask me for any details, but I do love to play. if you were a female, it was always okay to play sports as long as the sport you were engaged in didn't require you to step out of traditional gender role stereotypes. So you could swim, you could play golf, you could play tennis, you could do gymnastics, synchronized swimming. But when it came to, you know, team sports that were aggressive in nature, where physical contact was central to the activity, that was not okay. And so young girls and women were steered away from playing team sports. That, however, because of Title IX, has just exploded. So now you have women basketball players, obviously, which is the most popular sport, certainly team sport. You have soccer, you have lacrosse, you have hockey, speaking of Minnesota and Wisconsin rivalries. you just have things that when I was growing up were unimaginable, not to mention scholarships and professional leagues. So, I know we still have a long way to go. I'm not saying we don't, but that said, compared to what we had prior to Title IX, boy, does our cup runneth over.
Yeah. And, thinking back on, there was all a lot of grumbling about, we're going to have to kill some men's sports in order to have more women's sports. And there was a lot of grumbling about that. Do you think that's still there?
I think it's there to an extent, but only when schools, and I think it's mostly, frankly, because of economic reasons, are put in a position where they have to drop sports in order to keep their budget somewhat alive. I think what happened over the years is that, if you're an athletic director, if you're Barry Alvarez, when you're a young Barry Alvarez and trying to make a name for yourself, and he's told that Wisconsin is violating Title IX, this is typically what he had to do. He could add a sports team for women to the tune typically of $1 million a year, right, of recurring money for a sport where he's never going to make a dime. That's behind door number one. Behind door number two, he can drop a men's team like swimming, save $1 million and say, of recurring money, by the way, and say, don't blame me. Title IX made me do it. Or he can walk down the hall to the football coach, who in those days actually was Barry Alvarez, and say, you don't get to stay in hotels the night before every home game anymore. You don't get to take private planes to do your recruiting. You don't get to do X, Y, and Z. Now, if you're an athletic director, do you want to take on the football coach and the football program at the University of Wisconsin, or drop a men's sport, save $1 million, and say, don't blame me, Title IX made me do it? So that's typically what has happened over the years, is that even though the law itself and the policies to make sure you're in compliance don't say in order to increase opportunities for women, you have to decrease opportunities for men. But at the end of the day, that's kind of what happened, is that athletic directors, for their own survival, if nothing else, chose door number two.
Yeah, I can remember Pat Richter dropping baseball and the hullabaloo that,
yeah, that, of course.
That occurred around it. Well, I tell you what, Mary Jo, we've got callers online, and I want to give them a chance to join in, too. There's still a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. I hope you'll join in as we talk today with Mary Jo Kane, Professor Emerita of Sports Sociology at the University of Minnesota. Great to have her with us today. Our producer today was Janet Rose Schleiss, our on-air producer, Jane Rotunda. Tyler Ditter's our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at women in sports. We can talk coaching, refs, unequal media coverage. That's something we haven't gotten into yet, but we certainly will with Mary Jo Kane, Professor Emerita of Sports Sociology at the University of Minnesota. It's great to have her with us. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Some callers online. Let's take some calls. Sharon in Berlin, we'll go to you first. Sharon, hi. Thank you for calling.
You betcha. You know, Larry, I call you lots of times, and I'm an old lady. I graduated college in 1962. And when I went to work at Stout a little bit later in the registrar's office, I had friends there who had played varsity basketball and varsity golf in Iowa. I have a friend from my really young years who ended up going to school in Georgia, high school, and played varsity basketball. She went on to be a preacher. But there is a program that's on now that I'm familiar with. It's the one at Mississippi State in Starkville, and they have had a national championship women's basketball team, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 years. Their coach, Schaefer, went back to his home college, so now they have a different coach. I believe it is a woman, but my nephew, who's a professor there, used to ride the fan bus to the women's games with the older people, and he always supported them, and we always watched them because they were very, very good. But Wisconsin hasn't had things like that. There was no team sports for girls when I was in high school at Rice Lake. I don't know what happened to us. What was wrong with us?
Well, Wisconsin probably wasn't the only school that way, Mary Jo, back in those days, the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, Mary, certainly with.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, Sharon makes a good point, but certainly Wisconsin was not unique in that way. I mean, as I said, I grew up in central Illinois in the 50s and 60s, and as much as I loved playing sports, there were not opportunities for me, and that was true all over the country. Now, Iowa was a little different. Iowa always had very popular girls basketball. But again, things have changed because of Title IX. Schools, whether they wanted to or not, including in Wisconsin and Minnesota, had to open up opportunities for girls and women. And as I said earlier, we built them a ballpark and they just flooded the zone. And, you know, two generations later, women, you know, just for example, on the international stage alone, U.S. women dominate the Olympics, dominate world championships like the Women's World Cup. And it's a lot of it has to do with because of Title IX. These young girls have opportunities early and often. And boy, have we taken advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Gail in Belleville, it's your turn. Hi, Gail. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, when I was in high school in Virginia in 1970, To my recollection, the only girls team that there was the gymnastics team. And there was a group of friends that wanted to get a swim team started. And the boys did already have a swim team, and they practiced at Hampton University because Hampton University had just built a new Olympic-sized pool, and they had their old one that they rented out to the boys. Well, when we wanted to get started, we started having things like that to raise money because the school wouldn't give us any money to rent a place. And when Hampton University, which is a historic black college, found out that we were doing this, they offered us their Olympic-sized facility for free. And that was so cool.
Oh, it's a great story, Gail. Comment, Mary Jo?
Well, I just want to say good for Hampton College. And there's little stories like that, little, quote unquote, all over the country of women and men, who dads and, you know, moms who stepped up to the plate to do the right thing, meaning just give girls, young girls, an opportunity to play. And that's really all they're asking for, is they don't want a handout. They just want an opportunity to play on an equal playing field, and then let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. And speaking about even playing field, I wanted to bring this up, but we had a call. Seal in Menominee couldn't stay on the line and wondered if you could talk about the recent news during the NCAA basketball tournament, the inequalities between the female and the male facilities.
Yeah, speaking of dropping the ball, you know, I think what's really interesting about that story, well, first of all, that it was, I do not believe that it was intentional. I just think it was an oversight. It just did not occur to people. But I think that, to me, the most important part of that story was, speaking of the impact of Title IX, Larry, young, you know, again, in the early days of Title IX, and I'm sure some of your callers can relate to this, young women were just happy to be there. They you know, they took secondhand uniforms. They took second place in terms of hours and facilities and ice time. The difference today, as we approach the 50th anniversary of Title IX in 2022, young women today, for the first time ever, grow up with a sense of entitlement to sports. And so instead of just being happy with no weight rooms, you know, not as good facilities, not as good food or swag bags, and plus they're very savvy using social media, something that our generation didn't even have. These young women, because they have a sense of entitlement that, like, wait a minute, we deserve better than this, and we're not going to settle for this. They were outraged by what they experienced, put it on social media. It went viral. It embarrassed the NCAA. And lo and behold, within 24 hours, they had a much better weight room. So I think that, again, I'm not part of the conspiracy theory that this was intentional, but it was brought to the public's attention. And they apologized, and it was corrected. And I don't think it will happen again.
Yeah,
No,
I don't think it's going to happen again. They're going to be making sure of that the next time around. It was an oversight, and I don't think it was intentional either.
I don't either.
Al in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Al. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm just bringing up I did soccer for 20-some years because it existed, and so I was able to play. And then I got into judo, and judo has had to fight. When women were first allowed to compete, it was only in what is called kata, which are prearranged forms. Everybody knew exactly what was going to happen next, everything. It's almost like a dance, how planned out it is. It wasn't until a whole bunch of women in judo fought off the mat to fight in shiai, which is actual competition, which is in the Olympics, that brought women into all aspects of judo. So judo has gone through the same thing of watching women go from being sidelines to being right in there. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for calling. Comment, Mary Jo?
Well, I just think it's wonderful that, again, this sort of sense of entitlement, and that we meaning women and girls, to just deserve, again, I know I keep going back to this, but the same opportunities. We don't want any special privileges or favors, and it's unfortunate that you have to keep fighting. But one of the great things you learn about sports, one of the great lessons is perseverance, resilience. I'm coming back again next year. You know, this isn't fair. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep fighting. And in the end, I would argue that not just the young girls benefit, but so do their brothers and fathers and their communities as a whole. And that's the wonderful thing about sports.
Yeah. I promised that we'd talk about media coverage of women in sports, and you're probably the person who knows more about it than anybody else. And so I want to turn to that. What's your research showing on coverage of women in sports through media?
Yeah, again, I think there has been certainly not 50-50, but a dramatic shift over when I started doing this, looking at media coverage 30-some years ago. What we know is, as you pointed out, Larry, at the beginning of your show, is that about 40% nationwide of all sports participants are female, and 43% of all scholarship athletes at the intercollegiate level at Division I are female. Again, an extraordinary set of statistics. But what we also know, as you mentioned, is that in spite of that, women still receive only about 3 to 4, sometimes maybe 6% of all sports media coverage. And then until very recently, within that 4 to 5 to 6%, when female athletes were covered, the emphasis tended to be on how pretty they were, how sexy they were, rather than how athletically competent they were. I will say that the dramatic shift that I've seen over the last 30 years, not so much an increase in the amount of coverage, but when female athletes are covered, they are now covered in ways that we've always covered men. So if you watched any of the women's March Madness and Final Four, the emphasis was on their athleticism, was on their mental toughness, was on their training, great rivalries, great coaches. So it wasn't about how pretty Paige Beckers was from, speaking of Minnesota, it wasn't about how pretty she was. It was about how athletically gifted she was. And that has been an enormous shift. If you look at the Nike commercials or the Dick's commercials, as you mentioned earlier, Larry, what a shift, that where the emphasis is on on-court competence, not pretty, sexy babes off the court. And that is a truly dramatic shift.
Yeah, I would agree. I think just thinking of locally, on local coverage of sports, I think, and I pay pretty close attention to it because of my daughter in part, my observation is with, for example, the Wisconsin State Journal. I look at the local high school, coverage, and it's pretty even between the boys and the girls, the games and so forth, and the way they are discussed, as you say, really focusing on their athletic prowess.
Right, exactly.
And so that's been good. I don't know how, if local coverage of local teams is better than sort of the quote-unquote national coverage.
As a general rule, you should come to the Tucker Center and do a little scholarship of your own. Good observation, because as a general rule, what we find is that local coverage, especially of high school sports, is pretty equal for girls and boys. But the farther you go up the food chain, and as we get into ESPN and the broadcast network, CBS, ABC, NBC, it's much more skewed. With the exception of Olympic coverage every 4 years, it's very much skewed to men's professional and Division I athletics, which in many ways you can argue Division I athletics for men is professional. And that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a whole other topic. I just have to mention one other thing about, I really, the NCAA, the women's games were great. There were some wonderful players. And I had one really cool moment was Ada Barnes, the Arizona coach, who has a baby, and
yes,
and the comments about her, you know, having to at halftime provide some milk for her baby. But I thought the comments there were so good about here's this just goes to show how women can do it all. They can be wonderful, great coaches. They can be a great parent, and typically have to do more than the men do.
Right, exactly. And that it was a non-story. It was just a
yes.
comment. You know, it didn't become
yeah.
this big, oh my God.
Right.
And the other thing that I noticed about watching the women's Final Four, and I don't know, Larry, if you would agree, but I feel like, again, with each generation, the level of talent is
oh.
just like this exponential growth. I mean, these women were like, are you kidding me? I mean, they are playing a game of basketball that I haven't ever seen. And with each generation, they just get bigger, stronger, faster, mentally tougher. And again, it goes back to from a very early age, they have access to better facilities, better nutrition, better conditioning, better coaching. It's really quite extraordinary to witness.
Yeah. The same goes at high school level. So I've watched the girls' high school basketball, state basketball tournament, and, you know, I've watched it for years and years, and I was commenting to my daughter this year about how much the skill level has changed over time for a lot of good reasons, I think.
Yeah, and they also have exposure early on to very high level of competition. And so, you know, they are not afraid of the big stage. And that also has to do with experience and exposure early and often, all as a result of Title IX.
Yeah. Cindy in Lake Mills, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I wanted to let you know, when I was in school, in high school in the 70s, I wanted to play water polo. And the coach told me I couldn't because it was a boy sport. And I asked for the rule book, read it from front to cover, and it never said anything that a player had to be a boy. And I took it back to him and I said, show me where it says a girl cannot play. And he couldn't. So I ended up being on the JV team and played there for my years in high school. And after I left, they did start a girls water polo team and started other schools and encouraging other schools to have the same thing. But for the years that I was in high school, I had to play with the boys, but they didn't want me at first because I was a girl.
Oh, comment, Mary Jo?
Well, again, that story repeats. We could be here all day, and that story repeats itself over and over again. But what I am continually thrilled by, I used to be amazed, and I'm not anymore, is how, you know, was it Cindy? I didn't catch her name. Cindy?
Yeah, Cindy.
Called in. Cindy, that Cindy, you know, like the other women callers said, well, wait a minute. This isn't fair. You know, they had this sense that this is not fair. And so she had the pluck and the resilience and the determination and the confidence to go back to the coach and say, hey, wait a minute. And I'm assuming it was a he, relented. And then she did something that would have been very tough, which was to be the only girl on a boys' team. And good for her determination and, quite frankly, her guts. Because without people like Cindy, none of us would be here.
Yeah. Thank you again, Cindy. Collette in Paddock Lake. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and share my story of also growing up in a small rural area in central Illinois, playing girls basketball in 1969, 70, and 71. And the rules were different for the girls. We had six girls on the court at once. Two were on the offensive side permanently, two on the defensive side, and then we had two what were called rovers who went back and forth. And the rules were different for the girls, and I think this might have been clearly stated because girls supposedly didn't have the stamina to run back and forth on the court, you know, through the entire game. And so only the most athletic girls would be the ones chosen to be rovers. So just wanted to share that story.
Thanks, Colette. That's probably a story you've heard and are familiar with, Mary Jo.
Yeah, and it's a classic kind of story that the reason that we had to change the rules for girls, meaning make it less competitive and less strenuous, is because girls did not possess the physiological capacity to keep up with those kinds of sports. You know, that's the other reason why, if you think about it, in women's tennis, there's women win when you win 2 out of 3 sets to win a match, whereas for men it's 3 out of 5. And again, it goes back to this notion that women just could not keep up in terms of stamina. But, you know, it hasn't changed in tennis, but it certainly has changed in basketball. And as we just said, you know, watch the women's Final Four that we just witnessed this last weekend and tell me that those women couldn't keep up running up and down the court. I mean, I was exhausted just watching them. They're so good.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. My daughter and I sat and watched that. I was like, holy moly, at the end of several of those games, I was like, wow, I'm tired after watching
that.
Well, media coverage on this, it really does have an impact, does it not? If it's good coverage.
Oh, how, and again, not just in sports, but in any walk of life, the media and how the media present a certain topic has an enormous impact on how people think about women's sports. So, for example, if you are bombarded with images and narratives that talk about how competent female athletes are, you maybe are first of all going to tune in. And also, it gives you a certain sense of respect that young women and girls aren't going to get in other aspects of life. And I've also had young women say, when they see themselves portrayed this way, they'll say to me, Dr. Kane, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And so for them to witness, see themselves, speaking of women of color, young women of color, who are now dominating basketball, like is true in the men's side, you see young women of color, see those young women playing in the Final Four and thinking to themselves, that's who I can be one day if I work hard enough and I'm talented enough. And those were images that prior to Title IX, you just didn't see. It just didn't even occur to you. And now it's part of our daily staple.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our time together, but I do want to get Sarah from Waukesha on, who's got a story to tell, maybe in a different sport than what we've heard from already. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there, Larry. Well, these stories just are like my story, too, but I came in a little later. In 78, I was on the first girls' cross-country team at my high school. I don't know why this makes me cry so much. Running just was so important to me. And the reason they started that team was because my older sister's best friend, Linda, insisted that she run on the boys' team because she wanted to run so bad. So then I was on the first team, and I met my best friend there, and we were on the team the whole 4 years. We were co-captains. We're still friends. And I remember when our coach, he didn't give us interval training until like sophomore or junior year. And he gave us a short interval workout. And I remember afterward, he said, oh, you girls did really well. I didn't think you could do that. We're like, what are you talking about? Oh, it's really hard. And we're like, we were so angry. And then he was like, now I see that you can really work hard. And we did these hardcore intervals. And then he got fired for having an affair with another girl. And then our senior year, we had a super hardcore coach, and we had a great year that year. So that is my running story. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. Just the emotion in Sarah's voice.
Thank you, Sarah, for sharing that. And again, Larry, to me, it's just that, you know, young girls and women have always wanted to play sports like I did growing up. I played with my two brothers and the neighborhood boys that I went to school with. And guys have always known the power and the impact of sports from being on a team to making lifelong friends to pushing yourself harder to building your self-esteem. And so when young women finally got that opportunity after decades of being denied it, it has such an emotional impact. And Sarah certainly captured that. So what an honor to hear that story.
Thank you again, Sarah. And Mary Jo, thank you so much. Would you come back and be with us again? Love to have you back.
I would love to, Larry. And really, thank you again. I always love to talk about this. And you have a great show and obviously a great audience. So thank you very much.
Mary Jo Kane, Professor Emerita of Sports Sociology at the University of Minnesota. It's great to have her with us today, and so many wonderful calls from you. I appreciate those calls very, very much. And we're going to continue to talk about sports. We'll zero in next on pretty much on Wisconsin sports. And speaking of sports, one of our young sports fanatics, Megan Hart, our guest next. She's our sports reporter for WPR. She'll be with us next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.